Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, our weekly magazine of the performing arts here on KALW. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. My guests this week are Kevin Hauge, Artistic Director for Children's Musical Theater San Jose. He'll talk about their production of Billy Elliot. Actress Lori Holt enacts the title role in Colette, Uncensored, at the Marsh, which tells the story of the infamous French novelist. Plus, Brooklyn-based theater director Julian Crouch and San Francisco composer and musician Saskia Lane talk about their West Coast debut of Bird Heart at Z Below. Plus, commentator Peter Robinson will be by to offer a tribute to Merle Haggard and offer a review of Eye in the Sky and Anne Boleyn at the Marin Theater Company. Stay with us. My first pair of guests, well, his work is currently on Broadway with his Tony-nominated scenic design for Hedwig and the Angry Inch. A pleasure to welcome world-renowned theater designer, director, and puppet maker Julian Crouch to our airwaves. He's also wowed audiences at the Metropolitan Opera and the New Victory Theater in New York, as well as in London and other exotic locales around the globe. Julian, welcome.
Hi.
Joining him in the musical end of this collaboration, some of the music we're hearing in the background, in fact, comes from the multi-talented Saskia Lane with her band The Lascivious Biddies. She has appeared with artists as diverse as Jay-Z, Beyoncé, and the Kronos Quartet. Saskia, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you. Hello.
Interesting music we have going on in the background. First, let's tell us the story of what we're going to see on stage. It's a different kind of approach to theater in that it's going to be in a very intimate space, isn't it?
It is. It's a wordless piece that's made up of brown paper, mostly.
Okay.
In a little sandbox. And
well, maybe Julian can help enlighten us as to a storyline.
Ah, well, it's wordless, so it's, I would say it's more of a kind of poetic piece than a prose piece in that sense. So it's very open to interpretation, but basically it's the story of a brown piece of paper that is born out of an egg, and the brown paper's kind of like the soul of this creature that goes through lots of changes, different heads and feet and body parts come out of the sand, and it's a transformative show. So we follow the story of this piece of brown paper. I know that sounds kind of strange. It's why it's a visual piece and not a verbal piece.
It's funny. I think I skipped a paragraph on my introduction. I didn't even tell her what the piece is. It's called Bird Heart.
Oh, right.
Bird Heart.
Yes.
Yeah. It's at Z Below through the 17th of April. So an egg cracks open, and you're creating everything from the egg to the bird that comes out of it.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a cyclical story. You know, it ends where it starts. But also, we have a companion piece that we're premiering here. So we did it for the first time last night.
Yeah.
So there's a little added bonus for San Francisco.
Oh, nice. Well, we deserve it.
You do.
How have you found the folks at Z Below to work with in terms of welcoming?
We were just talking about them. It's amazing. They're amazing. It's an incredible team, and we feel really lucky to be with them.
Yeah, we feel like we're being treated like royalty. They've been very, very nice to us. And the audience last night was really fantastic as well.
Yeah.
Probably the most supportive audience I've ever played to.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it was a nice experience. Mm-hmm.
Saskia, we heard a little bit of your music. We'll hear a little bit more in a moment. Is this your first time working with brown paper and sand? Mm-hmm.
Definitely sand.
Okay.
A little bit of brown paper with Julian in past shows, but
really?
I would say
right.
Yes. I would say this is the first time with this material, mm-hmm. primarily.
Julian, talk to me a little bit about your early inspiration in puppetry or in theater.
Well, funny enough, because I was just talking about this morning, because the first things I made as a kid, when I guess I was like 5, 6, 7, was actually using that brown gum paper, the sticky stuff you'd have to lick. And I was laughing because I started doing that, you know, when I was a kid, and it seems like I've spent my entire life doing lots of different things, and I've come right back to the brown paper.
I was going to say, it's cool.
I've made stuff since being a kid. I always did it. It was only in my 20s where I sort of thought, oh, maybe I could do this for a living. It seemed an unlikely way. And I've been very lucky. I'm still messing around, and I'm in my 50s.
So is it more your own journey then through puppetry, or is there someone that you saw early on that you wanted to be like?
In a way, I think it was my own, because I remember even at that stage, I remember I got this book out of the library about paper sculptures, which are these very clean things made out of paper, and I didn't know how to do it.
Almost like origami.
Yeah, and I didn't know how to do it, so I ended up using newspaper and this sticky brown paper. And so I feel most of what I've learned is from me being inspired by something and not being able to do it the way you're meant to do it, and then finding your own kind of weird way of doing it. And you know, I did the music as well with Saskia, and it's a similar journey as a musician. And it's usually from the failure of trying to copy other people, you find your own thing.
Interesting. I mentioned that this does take place in a very small space, on a table, on the stage. How are you drawing people in who may not be in the first dozen rows or so?
Well, it's a funny thing, because I think people in the front row definitely see more detail, but it does reach pretty far back, even though it's an intimate show. We've played it for as big as, I don't know, 250-seat theater, and it seemed to work. But I think because we're focusing our energy and our beings into this piece of paper, it we're all in it together in a way. It's a collective experience. So because we're focusing our energy there, I think the audience does that as well.
And I think, you know, I've in my career, I've talked about this a lot. You know, puppets are obviously small, but, you know, a good actor on a big stage can raise his or her eyebrow and everyone will laugh. You know, we see a lot of detail out there. I think if something is good and it has the focus of the audience, they start to see very subtle changes.
Mm-hmm. It's not supplemented by jumbotrons on the side for those in the back rows. It's more, let's no, make
not
people focus down
yet.
Here.
Only when we play the stadiums later on in our career.
Saskia, about the music, is the eventual bird that is created reacting to the music, or are you providing music for the bird?
How is it integrated? In this case, some of the music was written with just a feeling around it. And then we knew that the bird would eventually want to fly. And so I wrote specifically with that in mind. So it's kind of both things.
Mm-hmm. And what else have you done musically in a theatrical situation? Is this as intimate as it's come down to?
Well, I've done a couple of different projects where I've written specifically for pieces. So I think, it's not my first, but in terms of my relationship to the piece, definitely the closest I've been.
And you're not actually performing the music. The music is pre-recorded, is that correct?
In Birdheart, yes.
Yes.
The companion piece, we do perform.
We play live.
We play live.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And Julian, you're a musician as well.
Yeah, and so we write it together, really. In this context, I'm a banjo player, and Saskia's a double bass player.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, tell me a little bit more about that, the collaborative piece, and the second Beyond Birdheart.
Well, it's a hard thing to talk about. It's a mask piece,
okay.
So it's not puppetry, per se, and we build masks live in front of the audience and
on
sort
each
of
other, yeah.
Yeah, on each other. But the relationship, they are connected, because it's about making something out of nothing, about the most simple materials in both pieces, and so that's the loose relationship there. Mm-hmm. with the both pieces.
So. It's so brand new. We've never had to talk about it before.
I mean, really, we don't even know what to call it.
It's brand new. Yes, we changed it in the morning. Played it,
wow.
You know, in the evening. People loved it, actually. And we were I mean, it was a very pleasant surprise how much they loved it.
Yeah.
So that's the new piece that we're hearing here first for the first time. Hearing and seeing for the first time.
Yeah, because, I mean, Birdheart, it's a kind of 30-minute piece, which, and we played a lot of festivals. It's a perfect festival piece because there's 30 minutes, you know, people want to go and see other things or whatever. And it's the length that it wants to be. But it's a little short for a whole, you know, for people coming to a theater, you know, for a whole evening. So we've put in a companion piece. Mm-hmm.
So help me out with when the show starts. What are we going to see on stage and what happens?
You're
going to have to give some away.
Okay, so you're going to walk into the theater and we're going to already be out there cutting material.
Pair of scissors each
and
cutting.
It's fresh each night.
Yes.
Brand new each night.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, even the Birdheart show, which is obviously our older piece. I mean, that's brand new every night as well because we're working with paper and magnets. You know, every night the paper will tear in a different way, there's a big improvisation element really in what we're doing. It's always brand new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Z Below is a great space to do this in.
Yeah.
It's a dream space because it feels so intimate. It is so intimate.
It's great.
Z Below on 470 Florida Street. Information about the performance is zbelow.org. Does this bird have legs, so to speak? Where do we go after Z Space?
Well, we go back to New York.
Wings, I should say.
Well, I guess it has. No, it has
legs. Legs and wings.
Yeah, definitely. We go back to New York for a show at... Well, we don't know if it's...
Well, we have one little show in New York.
And then we have a treat. We go to Belgium to perform for the Dalai Lama.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a wild thing.
We're playing a conference called the Life and Mind Conference. It's the Dalai Lama started. It's essentially, from what I understand, it's a group of Buddhist monks and a group of neurologists who are trying to look at meditation, both from a spiritual level and a neurological level. And somehow our piece of work, because there is a kind of meditation. It has a special feeling around it. It's hard to say what it is, but anyway, we were selected to be the entertainment.
Nice.
And to do a workshop as well.
Yeah.
Well, zbelow.org is where we can learn about these upcoming performances through the 17th of April. Where can we learn more about the larger projects you're doing?
That's a really good question, and we haven't got that together yet.
We'll have to get Liam.
On each of our websites.
Yeah,
to start.
I know my website's down. That's why
it'll be up. It'll be up soon.
Yeah. All right, Saskia, offer your site if you would.
Well, SaskiaLane.com.
SaskiaLane.com. Great.
And JulianCrouch.com, and I'm going to get that website up this week.
There's your incentive. We're actually going to go out with some of your music, I believe, Julian. Chicken. I've got a chicken.
Chicken jig, yeah.
Yeah, what is that all about? Tell us.
This is actually the moment that the piece of paper turns into a bird. But I kind of like chicken bird. It starts off with just legs and a brown paper body. And
it's a headless chicken.
By the end, it has a head and it has wings, like we said.
Thanks for coming in, and I look forward to seeing this really interesting show down at Z Below.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Julian Crouch and Saskia Lane, the artistry involved in Birdheart, as well as a special San Francisco-only performance, zbelow.org for more information. Music of Julian Crouch that you can hear at Z Below is part of their collaboration with Saskia Lane and Birdheart. Fascinating program show coming up. I'm David LaTulipe. It's open air. Still to come, you'll hear from Kevin Hauge, the Artistic Director for Children's Musical Theater San Jose. And Peter Robinson will be by with a tribute to Merle Haggard, as well as the last film that Alan Rickman made with Helen Mirren, Eye in the Sky. Peter will also talk about Anne Boleyn at the Marin Theater Company. Well, Colette Uncensored tells the story of the author's passionate quest as a writer, a woman, a pioneer for social change, and a lover. Colette wrote books that the movies Gigi and Cherie were based on, as well as 50 other works. In addition to a prolific career as a writer, Colette blazed trails in many areas, from women's empowerment to respect for nature to sexual liberation. In the title role for this solo show at The Marsh is Laurie Holt, an actor and playwright who has been a leading actress in the San Francisco Bay Area for more than 3 decades, working for Berkeley Rep, ACT, The Aurora, Marin Theater Company, SF Playhouse, and many others. Most recently, she originated the role of Joyce Rumsfeld in Cutting Ball Theater's acclaimed production of Mount Misery by Andrew Sato. Another memorable recent credit is for Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike at Berkeley Rep, a great fun show that was. And international credits include working at Birmingham Rep in England, the Barbican in London, and down south here in California at La Jolla Playhouse. She's a Cal grad with master's work and writing and literature at Bennington College. Welcome, Laurie Holt.
Thank you very much for having me.
So nice you could take some time. Now, I have to confess some ignorance of the writing and life of Sidonie Gabrielle Colette, other than anecdotal scandalous details. So I'm wondering if you can share with us in a nutshell who this remarkable woman was.
In a nutshell, she had such a larger-than-life existence.
Well,
she,
let's add a barrel full of nuts then.
Okay,
we've got the time.
Okay. I will say that you could approach her life and her work from probably half a dozen or a dozen facets, points of view, and end up with an amazing array of material to create a show with. And this all came out, well, Colette actually lived, she was born in 1873 in a little town in Burgundy in France, and ended up marrying a certain someone. it's all in the show. And going to Paris to live, and her life just becomes something that she probably could never have imagined there. And it's a wild ride, I'll tell you, through her life. And she is, she becomes famous first as a writer, but the books are not published initially under her name. Her husband appropriates the books that she writes, Henri Gauthier-Villars, or Willy, as the world called him. And so they're big bestsellers, and she is sort of taken to be Claudine, the heroine of the Claudine series, but she's the one who's writing them. It doesn't come out until later when she comes forth. Eventually, she just takes her power in the situation, and then
hence the scandal, hence scandalous aspect, thinking that this is a fictional person, but it is actually her in real life.
Well, that's
the
very least of the scandal. the things that she and her husband.
Well, keeping in mind that we're mid-afternoon on public radio, yes. What can we share? How salacious can we get?
She had a life that was very adventurous sexually, and she always, one of her quests was for freedom in love, in relationships. And that's one of the themes of this particular show that we've put together.
Affairs with both men and women, I hear.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. It's very true. And all over the place. And her writings about love are incredible. And her writings about nature. You can't bring everything into the show in about an hour and 15 minutes, but we try to touch on a lot of the themes that were important to her in her life. And one of the themes is freedom in relationships. That's one of the main things. And what the cost of it is and what the benefits are for that. And we look at those in the course of the hour and 15 minutes. This all came about because my co-writer, Zach Rogo, he wrote a book with René Morel, and it was all of these writings that they had discovered that had not yet been translated into English. So they created this book of all kinds of wonderful things, interviews that she had done, essays that she had written about people like Maurice Chevalier, who was in love with her but was afraid to tell her when he was younger, and so many different personalities and so many different aspects of her writing appear in this book. It's delightful. Shipwrecked on a Traffic Island and other untranslated gems, translated by René Morel and and Zach Rogo.
Well, you did a series of readings at Bay Area Bookstores.
Yes, we
recently.
Did. Well, that's it was over a year ago, and that's how this whole thing came about. The readings we did were strictly from that book. But after the first one, we had such a great response that Zach and I talked to each other on the way back to the BART station and said, has anyone ever done a one-woman show about Colette in this country? And we don't believe anyone ever has, at least not this sort of a show about her life, but this sort of a larger scope of her life.
Was she kind of in your radar then early on to have such an inspiring...
To
have this kind of dedication to creating a show about her. Did you know how familiar with her writings were you and when?
Well, in my 20s and my early 30s, I was reading a lot of feminist writers, French writers in translation, a lot of Virginia Woolf. I was all over the women's map then trying to read a lot. And that's how I first became acquainted with Colette's writings. And then Zach also translated one of her novels, did a beautiful
Green Wheat.
New translation, Green Wheat, Le Blé en Herbe. And that was about 10 years ago. That's how he and I first met. Barbara Oliver, the late Barbara Oliver, who was the artistic director at the Aurora, asked if I would come and do a reading at a bookstore at Mrs. Dalloway's. And so I said, why don't we do a section of it in French and then a section of the translation so people can hear the difference in the language. So we did that. And Zach and I got to be friends, and we worked together on a few projects after that.
Well, what was Green Weed all about?
Green Weed has a theme of an older woman who has an affair with a much younger man-boy, who's also exploring his first relationship with a young woman, girl, about his own age. And there's some kind of, well, let's see, how would you put it? There is some of Colette's life is in this book, although Chérie was written after a certain set of events happened in her life, which I really don't want to go into too much on the air. It's a sort of a surprise for the audience. I don't want to give it away about someone that she becomes involved with in her life. And it was both, one of her books was prescient and the other was written sort of after the fact. And the older woman was a little bit more aggressive, I think, than probably happened in Colette's own life. But it's a fascinating book about relationships, both young with each other and then an older woman and a younger man, which is, you know, the opposite from many of the things we get in Hollywood.
True enough. Yeah. Talking with Lori Holt, she is Colette for Colette Uncensored at the Marsh through May 14th. You talked earlier about how there's so much in her life that needs reining in into a show. You're working with the ubiquitous David Ford of the Marsh.
The master.
I understand
of the
he helped shape the show quite a bit. What did David change or contribute to the equation?
Well, he has this remarkable ability, sort of uncanny, to understand, or he pulls out of you what you're trying to accomplish with the piece, and then he just helps you to create that arc. And so he forces you to define what you would like to have, and then he helps you achieve that. And one of the ways he does it, which Jeff Hoyle had told me about, I worked with Jeff on this piece. He helped me with some of the gestural things I do and some of my vocal patterns and things, because I play a lot of different characters besides Colette. And at any rate, Jeff said to me, David, we don't need that Ford. So we'll be going through a run through. And we don't need that line. I don't think we need that one either. Really? What about? No, we don't need that. We don't need that. So that's
he's a great distiller.
He is a great distiller. He helps you to kill your darlings. And he does it so artfully. He's really amazing.
And just to the benefit of the overall product, of
course. Absolutely.
Always looking to that.
He's the master. I just, I admire him very, very deeply.
I also understand that this is your first solo show.
It is.
Is that scary?
Oh, what makes you think that?
I see the sweat marks on the top.
It's a little scary. It's a little scary. But I found this card. It's the new moon today. And so on the new moon, I like to write out my intentions for the coming month. And I found this amazing card at Whole Foods that has this picture of a woman that looks like Colette with these dark hair, this big bushy hair on either side with flowers in it. And it just says, fearless. And so that's my motto right now, is trying to just be fearless and have fun, because what I discovered once I got into a room with an audience after being for months with just David or David and Zach and nobody else is that they want to be there with you and they want to help you and they are my scene partner. As David says, they are my scene partner, and now my relationship with them evolves every night, and it's just wonderfully fun and,
nice.
And heartful as well.
Nice. So how many performances a week are going on for, I see Thursday, Fridays at 8 and Saturdays at 5?
Saturdays at 5 through May 14th here, and we'll see what happens after that. We may have another incarnation in the East Bay Marsh or... You know, we'll see where it goes from here. But
so how, I mean, you opened on March 31st, and we mentioned...
Preview is
March 31st. So is every performance evolving or changing a little bit differently? Are you finding things within your own...
Absolutely.
...arc, so to speak, that change?
That's the beautiful thing about performance, and it's the thing I'm discovering about solo performing is it's just a different... beast, and you really do have to develop a relationship with the audience that's a little bit unlike most plays that you do, you know, plays with other characters, and the audience is your other character. And so every night, of course, the audience changes. I use people in the front row a lot to be...
Be warned, people.
Be warned if you're in the front row. But it'll be fun. It's painless. and some people further back as well. But it's just... it becomes a real give and take. And you don't know who's going to be in the audience any given night. So you don't know what's going to happen. And so you just have to go with the flow and see. There was one performance on the weekend, last weekend, where I said something that... This woman was very vocal through the whole thing, and she was shocked by a lot of what was going on. And at one point I said something, and she went, oh! She was right there next to the woman I was talking to in the front row. And I just kind of gave a little glance, but I thought, I'm going to have to start figuring out how to respond to the people who are shocked.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about the movie rating that this would be assigned for audiences. Is it a PG-13, or are we moving into R territory or beyond?
In terms of the subject matter and some of the language, I think you could call it an R.
Okay.
I think so.
So no strollers for Z-Space,
for the
Marsh for this.
At least nobody under 14, maybe. I think that's what we thought about.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
Laurie Holt is Colette in Colette Uncensored, written by Laurie with Zach Rogo and directed by David Ford. It's on Thursdays and Fridays, as well as Saturdays, now through May 14th. More information at themarsh.org. Thanks for coming in, Laurie.
Thank you so much, David.
From France, we move a little north to London.
Best bloody Christmas party we've ever had. Hey! I know we've been out on strike for 8 months now, but don't worry, we're going to have the best bloody Christmas party we've ever had.
Hey, Santa!
What?
Can you hear it in the distance? Can you sense it far away?
Is it old Rudolph the reindeer? Is it Santa on his sleigh?
It's heading up to Easington. It's coming down the tide. Oh, it's bloody Maggie Thatcher and Michael Heseltine. So Merry Christmas, Maggie Thatcher. May God's love be with you. We all sing together in one breath. Ooh. Merry Christmas, Maggie Thatcher. We all celebrate today, cos it's one day closer to your death.
Well, a touch of Christmas cheer, as it were, in April, courtesy of Elton John and Merry Christmas Maggie Thatcher, setting the scene for my next guest's project down in San Jose. It's music by from Billy Elliot, the award-winning musical, which is receiving a treatment down South Bit at Children's Music Theater San Jose now through May 1st. The 2000 film was nominated for 3 Oscars. Set in northeastern England during the 1984-5 coal miner strikes, it's the story of 11-year-old Billy, an aspiring dancer dealing with the negative stereotype of the male ballet dancer. Following the film's success, the story was adapted for the West End stage as Billy Elliot the Musical in 2005, with music, as I mentioned, by Elton John and lyrics by Lee Hall. It opened in Australia in 2007, Broadway in 2008. Now, the West End production was nominated for 9 2006 Olivier Awards and won 4. And the Broadway production received 15 Tony Award nominations in 2009, tied with the producers for the most nominations ever received by a single show, eventually winning 10 Tonys, including the Best Musical. Here to talk about the San Jose production is Kevin Haughey. He's in his 19th season as artistic director of the Children's Musical Theater. Kevin has led this organization, the nation's leading theater company for youth, in taking increasingly challenging and professional quality productions. His innovative approach to productions includes incorporating modern techniques and technology, all culminating in recognition of artistic excellence from the National Endowment for the Arts for 9 consecutive years. Kevin has collaborated on productions in a variety of venues all over the world, from ice shows, magic shows, musical reviews, as well as television specials and full-on musicals, including a special Easter celebration at the White House in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Kevin, to Open Air.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, I understand from my introduction we have yet another accolade to add to your credits.
It is true.
Do share.
Well, it's the Lifetime Laureate Award given by SV Creates. They gave me a call and wanted to honor me. It's in an evening when they are giving out 6 grants to artists in our area so that they can increase their work. And they select someone from our community that is awarded this Lifetime Achievement Award. It's very humbling, of course. My favorite part about it is it really brings awareness of all the good people at CMT that are doing great work all the time. It's a way for people to all feel recognized for the good work that's going on at our organization.
Fantastic. And Mazel Tov on 19 years of fostering youth. You must have some interesting alumni coming back to see you.
Yeah. We probably have 8 kids that will be on stage on Broadway tonight that I can think of offhand, and including, say, for instance, Alex Brightman, who's the star of School of Rock, Andrew Lloyd Webber's new musical, for instance. We have somebody in Waitress that's just about to have its opening. So we have kids that are working all the time. But I'll tell you, for our main program, something we're really proud of is we cast everyone who auditions for our children's productions. So we're as proud of the kids that become architects and teachers and great moms and great dads as we are those that move forward with a career in the arts.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that audition process and how it intersects with a school day, or does it?
It does not. It's in the afternoons and the evenings, depending on the age group, and on Saturdays. No rehearsals on Sundays, no rehearsals on Mondays. And everybody gets an exact rehearsal calendar, so you're only in the building when you're actually working on stage. So it's manageable, and again, it's a good way for young people to understand the concept, one of those great universal life lessons we like to teach, which includes time management and being responsible for yourself and coming in knowing your stuff. And we found that so many kids do better in school when they're busy because they realize, for me to get down to the rehearsal hall, I got to get this done first. And we really encourage that, just in the same way that we see a lot of team building, and we see a lot of sometimes the greatest leaders in the room are not the kids in the heat of the spotlight. A lot of times they're on the edges of the spotlight. So sometimes we'll say, well, we need to get the 4 of you to stage left in the next 16 counts. And then you just sort of let it hold there and you say, do I have to do everything? And you can hear the voice come up and say, okay, guys, here's how we're going to make it happen. So it is when you have a company that's called Children's Musical Theater, and everyone that cast is audition, it's easy for people to say, wow, good for you. The shows can't be very good. But the fact is, it is possible to walk on the tightrope between inclusivity and excellence. It is possible to bring the greatest out of every kid that walks in the door and still put together an afternoon or evening of theater that speaks to an audience as well. It serves many gods. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to our marquee, which is what Billy Elliot is, two times a year our alumni and working actors in our area come together. And that's what Billy Elliot is. It's a cast of 40. In this case, of course, there are 12 young people in the show because it requires it in the cast. But it's 40 people. Many of them come back in from out of town to spend the 3 weeks because they're giving of their time and talent to put together a first quality show to benefit the programs we do at the Children's Musical Theater. Last year, in this time frame, we were doing Ragtime or Les Miserables. And what I really love about this opportunity is, got so many opportunities, it is remarkable theater by remarkable performers. Mm. The Montgomery Theater, where we perform, is a 500-seat house. So we're taking these relatively big shows, and with an incredible artistic team, are able to make it work in a smaller venue. But for an audience who basically, in most of the bigger houses you would sit in, every seat in our house would be a VIP seat. So these shows that are created for massive spaces that are played in a much smaller house, the emotions and the ideas wash over you very strong, and I'm really proud of the work that we put out there on the stage.
That's great. Well, you mentioned that it does take a village in terms of the artistic team that's involved with Children's Music Theater. Tell us a little bit about the team that you've been working with and to make everything happen, because it's not just about the kids auditioning and putting them on stage.
Well, we have 12 full-time staff members that we work with, and on the artistic team on every show, there's usually three that are doing all of the singing, the dancing, and the acting. We always use a full orchestra. We have somebody that runs the orchestra as
well.
Good
for you. I'm very pleased to hear that.
Yes. We have a full-time shop. We have four people working in the shop building all of our sets. We have two people working in the costume area constantly. It is a theater company. It's a legitimate theater company. That's why a lot of times you'll hear us refer to ourselves now as CMT, CMT Marquis, CMT San Jose, because unfortunately, people hear the word children's and they have a picture in their mind of dancing daisies and singing bunnies. We do some of that work, and we are proud of that work, but the way we are defined is absolutely not that.
So in addition to the on-stage roles that these kids have, do you educate the kids in other aspects of putting on a musical?
Well, yeah, in a couple of ways. I can tell you we have lots of young people that have gone on to tech and theater. And as they're growing up in the program, sometimes they love theater so much, but they're like, you know what, maybe I'd be better as a stage manager, or maybe I'd be better as a costume designer. So certainly as they're moving forward and we help them get into the right colleges and they'll come back in the summer and maybe design for us or stage manage for us, we take them on that journey for sure. So we try to make sure that we have it open for everybody. But I must tell you, we also have the most remarkable volunteer force. And a lot of our moms and dads fall in love with the crewing and the, you know, helping us with sets. And many of them do become stage managers for our productions and really hone that skill. It becomes their hobby. It becomes their passion. And I love seeing that intersection of families being able to work together, not necessarily right in the same room all the same time, but they're able to contribute to something that maybe over the dinner table, if anybody even has one of those anymore, they could have a quick conversation and say, hey, did you like that scene last night? It's just, it's a really wonderful organization to be
fantastic.
A part of.
Let's circle back to Billy Elliot for a moment. Now, the show is set in a very heavily accented area of England, Northern England. How far did you go with the kids in the authenticity department there?
We have a dialect coach. Each line has been coached out of the kids as well as the
So we're going to hear 30, that accent.
30 adults in the chorus as well, and the leads, and they're all doing it. It's very accurate. It's very precise. Yeah, it's going to what I love about Billy Elliot, it's too much to Elton John's credit. The music for that show is so remarkable because it really is about the show. It's not making beautiful tunes like Lion King. It's about enhancing the story. I feel like it's almost like we're putting on a play with music that has lots of dancing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned it's a large cast, including 9 adults. Tell us about your Billy.
Yeah. Our Billy, that's an interesting story. It's actually a cast of, I think, 42. Billy is, we sort of put out a national search. We did not think we would necessarily find the Billy here, so we were Skyping in many cities. Had our general audition, and in this young boy, Matthew Dean walked in. Matthew Dean is either in the gymnastics studio or in the dance studio. He told me he's in the gymnastics studio 20 hours a week and in the gymnastics studio probably the same amount. The kid does not stop, and he's an A student as well. We're very lucky that he walked in. He's having the time of his life. Every time he works, the people that are in the room, I really love the fact that the adults in the show really are feeling almost motivated beyond what they've done for the fact that this kid is so remarkable.
Nice. Well, it sounds like it's going to be an incredible production. We recently had one of your alumni here was coming down for a special award. Do you remember who that was? Niels is looking it up here, but she was featured somewhere else, and she was saying, "Well, she's heading down to San Jose."
I know who it was. It was it'll come right to me. Here it comes. Adrienne Eller.
There you go.
She was in Gentleman's Guide. She was in town doing that. She grew up in our organization,
and
she was very kind when she was here in town working to come down every year. We give awards to four young people who have really excelled the year before, not just in performance, but also in sort of emulating what we would want all the younger people to become. And she was a winner back in the day when she was with us, and she was kind enough to come and talk to all of the people. She's a remarkable performer.
One of the many alumni who's making it on the big stage.
Yeah.
Children's Music Theater, or more accurately, cmtsj.org, to learn about Billy Elliot, the fully staged, fully orchestrated production through May 1st down San Jose way. Kevin Hauge, we look forward to many more production talks and what's coming up down the calendar. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
We're going to go out with another tune from Billy Elliot from the Broadway production. This is Elton John's writing, and the tune is called Expressing Yourself.
Is it sinful if you're blue to cheer up the place? What is wrong with dressing up in satin and lace?
Oh, no.
Get some earrings, some mascara, heels and a fan. Pretty soon you will start to feel a different man.
Ole, baby!
What the hell's wrong with expressing yourself?
Ooh!
Being who you want to be.
Oh, we're joining.
Add to that equation, if you want to be an announcer, announce. David Latulli doing just that. You can catch Billy Elliot down in San Jose, cmsj.org, for more information for Children's Musical Theater San Jose, cmtsj.org for information about Billy Elliot down there through May.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. We don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street. 'Cause we like living right and being free. We don't make a party out of loving, but we like holding hands and pitching woo. We don't let our hair grow long and shaggy like the hippies out in San Francisco do. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee.
Yes, San Francisco dig, not to take into account the passing of the great Merle Haggard. Country music, not something you'd normally hear on Open Air. All the more reason I'm grateful for Peter Robinson to offer his tribute to Merle Haggard. Hey, Peter.
Hi, David. Yeah, good to be here. And yeah, Merle Haggard really extended beyond America. In fact, in 1988, when he was playing in Wembley, I did interview him. He was also big in Germany. So his music was not simply restricted to the Old West, as they say. And I think with his passing, what we have is a half century of songs from someone who was the poet of prisons and bar rooms. He covered highways and train stations. He spoke about loves lost and loves remembered. And I think what he really did was put the spotlight on both being a celebrity, but also looking in a mirror. And I think he brought those two elements together. And I know I'll just speak for myself. I could always find a piece of myself in his lyrics. So he is indeed, to me, a great loss. And when I was thinking about that line about long hairs and the like in San Francisco, in the late 70s, there was a local group here called the Young Bloods, who actually had quite a few hits. And they came out with a song which, in a strange way, was a tribute to Mel. It was called I'd Rather Be a Hippie from Olema. And in their version, they took that one piece of repetition, we still take in strangers if they're ragged, with we still take in strangers if they're haggard. So way around, they gave this tribute.
Well, we got to back up a minute, Peter, because you mentioned you have some of your own traits are reflected in Okie from Muskogee. What's the British equivalent of that line?
Well,
proud to be. Let's hear it.
I'd rather be a Beatle from the Liverpool. I think, or I don't think you can quite get the rhythm. And to me, I don't think there's anywhere else in the world called Muskogee. So I'm sure the poets and the rhymesters would have a hard time coming up with their equivalent.
Well, I'll leave that as an assignment for you for next time.
Okay.
I do need to mention an anecdote that our morning announcer Joe Burke mentioned about Merle Haggard today. When Merle Haggard and Johnny Cash had met up at some sort of a talk show, Merle had mentioned how much he was influenced by the work he did at Folsom Street Prison, and Johnny said, "Oh, were you part of the warm up band for that?" And he said, "No, I was in the 10th row." It's anecdotal because he was actually in San Quentin, because Johnny Cash actually did work both at San Quentin and Folsom Street.
Yeah, and I think interestingly enough about those days in prison, according to Rolling Stone, he did receive a formal pardon from Ronald Reagan, so maybe it was put behind him. When we look back at his history, he had 12 major hits. He had over 20 musical awards and even got an honorary degree in music and the arts from the University of California. So there's a lot in the range of what he did. And perhaps just a reflection on that famous song, I think it is worth saying that he was no more comfortable in the Nixon camp than he was in Nashville. His sound was in many ways more authentic than the actual Nashville commercial sound. So what he's brought together, in fact, in 2007, he wrote a supporting song for Hillary Clinton. So,
wow, okay.
So there is a kind of range that you can confuse with something that he really felt was a song in Muskogee, which was about his father. When you're running down our country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. So he had that ambiguity, but above great all, he had that great soul and great voice, and indeed, I and I'm sure many listeners will miss him.
Indeed. Moving on to Movie Land, I believe.
Yeah, Movie Land, indeed, and it's a tribute to the late Alan Rickman, a movie with Helen Mirren. It's called Eye in the Sky, and I think it handles a very controversial subject about what I'm going to call cyber war, or in this case, drone warfare. The story is set in Nairobi, Kenya. It's a British operation, but the actual missiles, they are Hellfire missiles, are launched by an American military personnel from a base in Las Vegas. So what we've got is a multinational decision-making film about whether or not to go after some terrorists who in the film are part of Al-Shabaab. They are operating out of a house near Nairobi. And of course, the crux of this decision-making turns on a young girl, a lady in her early teens. And she is selling bread actually on the edge of the house. So what the moral dilemma is do you destroy the terrorists who are loading up their vests for a suicide attack and let the girl live, or do you hold back in the interest of what I call humanitarian consideration? And this gives line to one of the best lines in the movie. It's delivered by the American Defense Secretary, who happens to be reached, believe it or not, in China, playing ping pong or table tennis. And he can't believe that the Brits can't make a decision. And he calls them a bunch of wusses, a bunch of wusses. That's a line that he delivers with vigor as he condemns British decision making.
A bunch of wusses.
That's what they are.
I can do that with my voice now, man.
Now, of course, the film, I think, stretches a little bit of the imagination. And in the end, when they have these two little spies, they are birds. One is a hummingbird and the other is something which looks like a flying beetle. I spoke to a friend in Silicon Valley. Can you actually fly these things into a house? And he raised a quizzical eye, wondering how long was the battery life and could you get a battery small enough? Anyhow, that does not deter from the film. Helen Mirren turns in an outstanding performance as the colonel. Sad loss, goodbye to Alan Rickman, who is at the center of the movie, and a great story. It's called Eye in the Sky, running here both in San Francisco and in Marin.
Speaking of Marin, I believe you have some theater news for us.
We have indeed, yeah. In fact, on Saturday, that's the 16th of April, I'm introducing a new play at Marin Theater Company. It opened in November in London. It is Howard Brenton's Anne Boleyn. I really enjoyed the London performance, and I think she is one of those great enigmatic creatures of history. She had a short run. She lost her head. Was she guilty or was she innocent? Was she the loss of Henry's attention, or was she indeed the sufferer of someone who could not bring or give a male heir to the Tudor dynasty? We say dynasty, I'll say dynasty. So that, to me, is a really interesting play that turns on the importance of the second wife of Henry VIII, that is Anne Boleyn. Now, the play moves fast forward 70 years to the reign of James I. That's James I of England, James VI of Scotland. And here we have a different dynasty. We have the Stuarts as opposed to the Tudors. But we also have in between Shakespeare. We have the translation of the Bible into the James I edition. We have the transformation of England from an old feudal society to something moving towards a constitution with a king and parliament. A great play, some great lines, and an intriguing central character, that is Anne Boleyn, the Queen herself. And that opens on April the 16th, that's Saturday, at the Marin Theatre Company, which is on Miller Avenue in Mill Valley. Highly recommended. I enjoyed the London production. I'm sure we're in for a treat here in Marin.
Thanks, Peter, and we look forward to your next dispatch from Muskogee or wherever you happen to be.
I'd rather be a hippie in Alima.
There you go. Well, that's Open Air for this Thursday, the 7th of April, on this Billie Holiday's birthday. We'll hear some music in the background as I offer some other suggestions for culture and the credits for today's show. Tonight at 8 in the new San Francisco Opera Lab, chamber music comes to the opera. Among the performers, my friend and wonderful tenor, Brian Thorsett, will be performing. Also, another wonderful guy, Shinji Oshima, who plays bass with the San Francisco Ballet and Opera Orchestras. He's got a work that's being done. And David Conte. It's like old home week. I'm sorry I'm going to have to miss this, guys. SF Opera Lab tonight at 8. Information at sfopera.com. And our good friend and colleague Sarah Cahill will be at Old First. She's finishing her Artist in Residence series with a selection of compositions that have been dedicated to her over the years, including Terry Riley's Be Kind to One Another, John Adams' China Gates, Pauline Oliveira's Quintuplets Playpen, Paul Drescher's Two Entwined, and many others. Amazing. Sarah's recent appearances include a concert at San Quentin of the music Henry Cowell wrote while incarcerated there, Lou Harrison's Piano Concerto with Stephen Schick and the La Jolla Symphony. And she's the host, of course, on Sunday evenings of Revolutions Per Minute here on KALW. New and classical music heard from 8 to 10. Sarah at Old First tomorrow evening at 8. I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air. Our show is archived at our website, kalw.org. If you have a show segment suggestions, by all means, send me an email, david@kalw.org. The show is produced by Neil Swinkles, who maintains our calendar and offers some great insight into the guests that are appearing week after week here on Open Air. Thanks for listening, and happy birthday, Billie Holiday.
I'm no good without you. Take my lips, I want to lose them. Take my arms, I'll never use them. Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. How can I on, dear, without you? You took the best, so why not take the rest?